Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome in everybody. Happy Monday to you again, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. It is Jaguars Today here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Carolina, Denver, Super Bowl 50, Tony. As it turned out, the two top seeds in the National Football League held home field.
Yeah.
And, boy, Carolina looked impressive once again.
They have all season long.
They played a complete game this time, though.
And the two playoff games, I mean, what they did to Seattle in the first half, and Seattle showed a lot of backbone last week in that game, and you could see just how talented that Carolina team is, which is why they've been installed as an early 4.5, 5-point favorite over Denver, getting ready for Super Bowl 50.
And Tony, you look at it, their offense has been spectacular, right? Well, Cam Newton's a unique player at this stage of his career. Ran for, 11 touchdowns, I think, this year, in addition to all the ones he threw for. But across the board, with the exception of Greg Olsen, what do they have at the skill positions that is all that much better than what Jacksonville has right here? I don't think there is much. I think Jacksonville's wide receivers I'd rather have. Certainly Olsen versus Julius Thomas I think is pretty close just on pure talent. Jonathan Stewart at this stage of his career is playing maybe some of his best football, but it's not like they're light years ahead in that department, but O-line play I think could be what separates these two offenses.
Sure, and it's Cam Newton's ability to extend drives too. He's been so good, and he's such a weapon once you get down there in goal-to-go situations, because you talk about you want that threat of run-pass. Well, nobody is more of a threat of run-pass than Cam Newton at the quarterback. There's nobody else that has the physical skills that Cam Newton does with his size to just bully people down there on the goal line. And when they put Cam Newton and Mike Tolbert in the backfield, it doesn't matter who's playing wide receiver for that football team. If you only got to throw it 5 yards, everybody can throw it 5 yards. It's trying to figure out how to close down that space on Cam Newton, which has shown to be really, really difficult, especially when he's playing at the kind of level that he has been for this entire season. Cam Newton is the league MVP. We knew it going into the playoffs, and he has shown it off the last couple weeks. The numbers he's put up the last 2 weeks in the playoffs are simply ridiculous. Becoming the first quarterback to throw for 300 yards and score 2 rushing touchdowns yesterday in the NFC Championship game, and he didn't even play the last half of the fourth quarter of that football game for Carolina. Unbelievable what Cam Newton has done.
Yeah, well, he's been super efficient, too. And they talked about yesterday his lack of turnovers in the red zone this year. That is a big thing that separated his play this year from a guy like Blake Bortles' play, who put up big numbers, you know, in terms of putting points up on the board. You got to get more efficient with the football, and it shows you the gulf right now between those two, and certainly the defense on both of these football teams. The defense is a big, big factor. They really harassed Carson Palmer yesterday, and Arizona had been one of the highest scoring teams in the National Football League most of the season, and you can argue that they're a little bit off their game last week, and Carson Palmer had the issue with the finger on his throwing hand, but they said before the game it wasn't a factor. I don't know if it was a factor. I just thought the pressure on Carson Palmer, getting hit, guys getting hands on the ball, not letting him feel comfortable, not letting him have time, and I thought tight coverage as well. When he did get rid of it, Tony, there was somebody in the hip pocket of those Arizona receivers all afternoon.
Look, Carson has been shaky both games. He didn't look really good yesterday. I'm not sure how much it was Carolina's pressure and how much it was just the pressure that Carson Palmer feels once he gets to the playoffs. He's a guy that coming into the game last week against Green Bay had never won a playoff game, and he looked like that type of guy in the second half of that game last week. He looked shaken in the second half of that game, and Carolina coming out again, they just blitzkrieg opponents in the first half right now, and Arizona had no answer for it. They had an opportunity late in the half after getting that turnover to go down and make something happen, and instead that first play after they get the long return from Patrick Peterson, and good on Ted Ginn Jr. for chasing down that play and running it down from behind because they get the interception on the next play. If they can make something happen on that drive, you got a football game again. But Carson Palmer just handed it right back and turned the ball over 6 times in that game by himself. 4 interceptions and 2 lost fumbles over the course of the NFC Championship game. That's not even close to good enough to winning football when you get to this point. You can't win.
What did you think the betting line would open at, by the way? What did you expect?
My guess was 3-4.
I thought it'd be six. Just because of the way Carolina's played of late, you know, and the role that they've been on.
I think the Denver defense, I mean, what they did to look, Tom Brady has been really good this year, and really offensively, they didn't do anything in that game yesterday. It was that Denver defense just did what no one else has been able to do and shut down that New England offense.
But it's a week after you were left feeling if Pittsburgh had all their pieces, they would have won that football game against Denver. At least I was left feeling that way. You know, had they had Antonio Brown, and certainly Le'Veon Bell's been out most of the season, but if they had at least D'Angelo Williams in there last week, I think they would have won that football game. Obviously, they didn't. I think the sentimental money was all going to go on the Denver Broncos. 4.5, I guess, is what the official consensus was that it opened at. In most places right now, I'm looking at in Vegas, it's a 4-point spread with Carolina leading Denver. I think that might even tighten up as the Super Bowl rolls around. It might be a 3-point game when it's all said and done. But Carolina, I think, deserves to be the favorites. But I think, you know, you look at it, as much as you're coming off that game last week, we're going to have the impression of, while Carolina looked this much better, while Denver's defense was definitely impressive, it was still a much closer game with New England. We're thinking New England coming off a very impressive win against Kansas City. Denver struggling a little bit with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Just about everybody that I could tell was on the New England side of things going into that game, and obviously it didn't work out. So whatever the perception is, not going to matter. I think Carolina is a team that plays well as a front runner. And we've seen them let other teams back into games a little bit and struggle. Now, they can't have struggled that much. They went 15-1 in the regular season.
Right.
But they have at times had a little bit of a look on their face when things don't go their way, but they found a way to overcome it most of the time. We'll find out. Cam Newton right now, I think, wants to play that front running. When I say front running, just, you know, when things are going your way, they feed off the emotion. They like to let it snowball, and he loves, you know, he's having more fun yesterday. And it didn't really bother me, you know, doing the Superman thing, pulling open his jersey, kind of pantomiming that. I mean, that's what they play off of. That's what their team is all about. It probably does bother some other fans and players, but I think they live off the fact that it bothers people, and they're going to like getting under others' skin. I think they're going to be the loose team. I think you're going to see Denver come in very businesslike into San Francisco, and I think you're going to see Carolina running their mouth a little bit, and you know, they may wise up and go with the all, well, we have tons of respect and not give you any kind of bulletin board material. But by the way, Denver's the one who gave the bulletin board material this week against New England, so maybe I'm wrong, but I just have a feeling when it all comes down to it during Super Bowl week, you're going to see Denver be a little bit more close to the vest. You're going to see Carolina. We'll see if they let their personality fly and they try to ride that wave of emotion like they've done all season long. If you want to get in today, asking you, what's your early prediction for Super Bowl 50? Not who you want to win. We did that last week. I'd prefer Carolina to beat Denver, but I found once Denver won, Tony, I kind of felt like, you know what, I'm going to be okay with any
outcome. It's all roses.
You know, at this point, Arizona, Carolina, gone. Denver, I don't have that much hatred towards Peyton Manning. As you know, for a Jag fan base, I can certainly understand the anti-Peyton Manning sentiment because he did it to you for so many years. I can also understand the anti-Carolina sentiment if you have some because they came into the league with you, and this would cement that they were the more successful startup franchise. Right? Keep in mind, when the Jags made that run in 96, Carolina went to the NFC title game that same year and have since been to a Super Bowl, now going back to a second one. So we'll talk about that a little bit today in the fan feedback spotlight if you'd like to get on board with that. MD_1010XL, my Twitter handle, at 1010XL Fat Tony and at 1010XL Tyler. Also look back and listen back to a little bit more from Gus Bradley and Todd Wash from Friday. Some of the stuff we couldn't bring you as Todd Wash was introduced as a new defensive coordinator. Gus Bradley getting the one-year extension. Buses loading up for Mobile this morning, Tony. When I came in, I said, where are these buses out here? Oh, yeah. Road trip to the Senior Bowl. So Dave Caldwell came in. We're rocking the shorts this morning in 35-degree weather. So your GM is tougher than everyone else's GM, Jacksonville. Just remember that. Also today, we will get to Johnny Anonymous, author of NFL Confidential, an interview we had intended to bring you last Friday. But if we don't get it out there today, it's going to be kind of relegated to the ash bin of history in terms of radio because we are jam-packed the rest of the week with Jeff Loggeman in tomorrow, and on we go the rest of the way. And a number of correspondents, including our own Dan Hicken and John Osier, checking in live from the Senior Bowl over the next few days as well. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. 641-1010 if you'd like to be a part of the program. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Coming back, if you don't follow me on Facebook, and or Twitter, and you didn't see the story of how my Friday afternoon went, I'll give you an update on why I ended up being in a great mood all weekend long. Will it carry over, Tony? Do I owe the listeners of Jacksonville a week of happy Mike? And maybe coming up next. It's Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, just kicking things off. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Y Darrell Williams, 7 lineros ofensivos una vez más.
Vamos a ver qué va a suceder. Ahí está Cap. Se va a meter.
Sneak por la izquierda o por la derecha.
Ahí está, manda sus números. Se va a meter, se va a meter. Se va a meter. Se va a meter. Touchdown. 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 Báilale. Báilale. Báilale, Cap. Suéltame, suéltame la pelusa, dinosaurio. Suelta la pelusa. Pelusa por aquí, pelusa por allá, pelusa por delante, pelusa por detrás. Para ti, mi querido dinosaurio, montones de mandos, manchas y ciruelas. Para ti, mi querido dinosaurio. Touchdown, las panteras, las panteras.
I got nothing for you, Tony, on the translation.
I heard him say touchdown a lot.
I heard him say palooza.
He also said bailame, bailame. He said it like four or five times, and I do believe that's the Spanish for I dance.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I was just dancing right here in my seat.
I wonder what the Spanish word for dab is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He obviously has a little song that he sings when Carolina scores because he goes through that. There's a rhythm there.
Right.
But I have no idea what he's saying.
How
there.
Great would it be? That's the Carolina Panthers Spanish language broadcast crew. What's the official call letters on that, Tyler, so we give him credit?
That was La Raza, 106.1.
La Raza. Wouldn't it be fun to have those guys to like do a little mini documentary just to follow you for a day and narrate your day.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like the great things you did. Like what would be deserving of the over-the-top, or would everything be like that? You know, making a trip to the fridge.
You just send them a tape of your day, and then they just narrate it and send it back.
Right? Maybe that's it. You know, I don't know. But, it would be too expensive to hire them, I have a feeling, Tony, to follow me around. But maybe as a media project.
Bailame.
I got no idea. I wish they had been calling my day last Friday.
Yeah. Translate that, Tyler. You need to figure that one out. We need to know what he said.
Yeah, slap that one into Google Translate. I'm sure that thing is foolproof. It always works. Tony, this is my afternoon on Friday.
Yes.
I shared this story on Facebook and Twitter last Friday, which I rarely write the, hey, look at what happened to me today kind of post on Facebook, but I thought this was pretty cool. I'll try to make this, which could be a very long story, as short as possible. Left work, went over to the station, need to stop by Men's Warehouse, pick up a shirt for the trip to San Francisco. So go in there, get a shirt, pay with my debit card, boom, everything's good. And at some point the guy goes, hey, I need the last four numbers on the debit card. So I remember having to pull it back out again. And at that point, you know, I just didn't think about it. I guess it's like clockwork. I put it in my pocket. I was wearing cargo shorts. And that particular pair of shorts, the pocket's kind of shallow on it, right? And it's on my left side. And I always carry, I'm like anal about this. I have a billfold with my cash. I carry my right pocket. And now all the pickpockets will know how to target me. And I carry my wallet, which I call my wallet. It's like a billfold, a separate billfold with my driver's license, all my credit cards, and all that stuff. So get in the car, drive home to St. Augustine, la, la, la. It's the middle of the afternoon on Friday. Don't have to work the rest of the day. I got a show Saturday night. Otherwise, the weekend's free for me. So I'm in a great mood. Stop by the grocery store. Stop by Publix on State Road 16 and get a few groceries. Get up to the register. boom, wallet's not there. You know, that sinking feeling when you grab for it, you know where you carry it, and it's just not there. Uh-oh, did I leave it? Where did I leave it? Well, I knew I used it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably in the car. It's got to be in the car. Great chance. You know, just fell out of my pocket in the car, and that's where it is. So I had some cash on me in my other pocket, pay for the groceries, bring it out to the car, start searching the car. Now, the car's pretty new because the car went on the fritz on us and finally died back. You know, we got hit in November, and
yeah,
they, you know, totaled the car or whatever. So it's not a lot of clutter in my car, believe it or not. Anyone's ridden my car, Donna Murphy's probably laughing because she's ridden in the car when I've had probably 30 empty soda cans on the passenger floor. That's kind of how I recycle. And then I'll, you know, scoop them up all at the same time. Anyway, not in the car, search your car, go into Publix, check at the front desk. Hey, did anybody turn in the wallet? No, nobody turned in a wallet. Go around the store, retrace my steps, go back to the car, boom. All right, call Men's Warehouse. Have you guys seen a wallet? Well, who checked you out? I described the guy. He's on break right now. When he comes back, I'll have him check and get back with you. Okay, so he calls me back. I miss the call. It goes to voicemail because I've got like no signal in the parking lot. I've got like one bar. So I finally am able to call back and get a hold of him. He's like, yeah, hey, yeah, I checked the register area. I checked the parking lot. I was parked right in front of the store. It's not like I was traipsing through the place. And I even went next door. I think it's Zales is next door to the Diamond Place. And because that's, you know, maybe if somebody found it, they brought it there.
Sure.
That was very nice of them to do. Nothing. So I got to cancel all these cards. We booked our travel for San Francisco. We booked our, you know, our broadcast setup out there. All these things on different cards. And what if somebody goes to run the card and I have it canceled? Now we're not going to have this. And I'm all these different scenarios playing out in my head. And I'm just, you know me, pretty mild-mannered guy, right? I handle things very well.
Yeah.
No. I don't get upset about much.
No.
No. So I'm freaking out, right? I'm calling Nick Furis, my business partner over at Spectrum. I'm like, bro, put a hold on the company card. Put a hold on my debit card. Did all this stuff. When am I going to be able to go get my license? Da-da-da-da-da. And so then I listen to the message from the guy from Men's Warehouse. He's like, yeah, I can't find your card. And I'm like, well, no, you're supposed to be looking for the whole wallet. So I think maybe he's misunderstood. So I said, you know what? What else do I have to do? Let me drive back up to Jacksonville and search and satisfy for myself that it's not there. Park in the parking lot. I mean, it took about 30 seconds to realize, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot to search. It was not there.
Sure.
Right? It was, if I'd left it at the register, there weren't many hidden nooks and crannies. He would have found it. So I'm like, well, I just had to see for myself. Thanks. If it turns up, give me a call. So now I'm bummed, right? I'm just, my weekend's devastated. Driving home, almost home. It's like, you know, 55 minutes from town center to my house, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm almost at a house, and my wife calls. I'd already called her to tell her that we might have to start canceling everything. And she goes, Some guys showed up at the door, knocking on the door with my wallet. Like, you got to be kidding me. And she goes, yeah, yeah, they're here right now. They wouldn't take any money. I didn't have any money anyway. So I said, well, tell them to wait. I'm almost there. I'm like 3 minutes away. I just want to thank them personally. And so I do, and they're waiting by the driveway, and they're like, you know, like, I don't understand what the big deal is kind of thing. Never mind the fact that they're just single-handedly, the two of them, restoring my faith in humanity by the second, right? And so got one guy, the driver's got a thick Russian accent. His name's Constantine. His passenger's name is Baker. That's all I know about the guys, other than they found my wallet in the Men's Warehouse parking lot. There's no phone number in it. I don't have any, you know, a business card in it. It's just all my credit cards and debit cards and all this stuff. And I'm not listed in the phone book. I'm listed under my wife's name. So they don't have any way to get hold of me. They pull the license out and just followed the address right to my house, bring it to the house. My wife had fated them with four oranges and a pack of Reese's peanut butter cups, which is so Heather. If you know Heather at all, you can just see her palms up going, here, take this.
This is right? What we have.
This is what we – I'd like to give you something. Will you take these oranges, please, sir? And she said – the guys probably thought she was insane, but they're like, let's not have to deal with the crazy lady. Take her oranges,
sure,
and then let's get out of here. So I happen to have an Outback gift card, and it may have been one that Fortunato may have even given me for Christmas. I can't remember, but we all do around here. We all trade the same gift cards back and forth, right? I mean, that's how it goes. So I'm like, at least let me buy dinner for you. I've got an Outback gift card on the counter. And so they're looking at each other like, all right, fine. You're already wasting enough of our time. And so I ran inside, gave them the card, shook their hands. They wouldn't take any cash, didn't think they did any big deal. So I just thought that was so cool that, you know, not only did they find it, not only did they not do the unscrupulous thing, or do, you know, and keep it, or do the easy thing, which nobody, I would have been thrilled had they done the easy thing and just turned it into the nearest store and said, sure, hey, you know, would you guys deal with this? I found this in your parking lot. They drove all the way to my house, dude.
Right.
And it took time out of their day and just, I mean, never to, you know, just didn't, weren't even going to stick around. So if anybody knows, I'd estimate they're around 50 years old. If anybody knows Constantine and Baker, those are good dudes.
That's great job.
Hey, that was a great job.
That's pretty awesome, man.
It put me in a hell of a good mood this weekend.
You don't know. Like, if they just turn it into the nearest store, you don't know which one that's going to wind up being. And if it's not Men's Warehouse with no contact information in there, you may never get it back.
Right. Are they going to call? Are they just going to sit there and hold it until I show up? I don't know what's going to happen. But fortunately, in where the parking lot, the way the parking lot was situated, in that section of parking lot, it was either going to be Men's Warehouse or Zales. If
no, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I mean?
About,
because
yeah,
the other, like, past Zales is, like, closed. There's nothing in there.
Yep.
And there's nothing right across. So it was, you know, pretty much narrowed down. But when they didn't turn it in, and when I drove back up to Men's Warehouse, I told them, somebody found it. Somebody found it and took it. Well, I was right. They did, but they took it to my house. So any bad thoughts I thought about all of you who may have found my wallet, and I was really thinking bad thoughts about all of you, and thinking about, you know, ways to enact my revenge against you, here I am thinking bad about my fellow man, and my fellow man shoved it right in my face by doing a major good deed for me.
Yeah, so, it's cool.
You know me, dude. I'm a stressed out kind of guy over nothing. And I went from being not going to have a very good weekend to I got home. I was dancing. I was jumping up and down as much as my bad knees. I had Spanish language broadcast going off in my head about how my afternoon had played out. So phenomenal. Constantine and Baker. If anybody knows these dudes out there, if you know anybody by those names, they're not exactly common names, by the way. Do something nice for them today, even if they're not the people. Pay it forward on my behalf, right, so I don't have to. I'm kidding. I'll do something nice, Tony. Maybe I'll be nice the rest of the week. I don't know. That's a lot to ask of me, but I've considered it. Maybe I'll be kind and happy, Mike, the rest of the week, no matter how crazy we get on the phone calls this week, no matter what anybody suggests the Jags need to do this offseason to fix their squad. I will just go along smilingly. So that was my Friday afternoon. And it left me off with a phenomenal weekend. All right, we'll come back. We'll hear from Todd Wash, new defensive coordinator of your Jacksonville Jaguars, as he got a chance to address the media on Friday and talk about the process that went into him getting hired as defensive coordinator. Saw him this morning getting ready to hop on the bus, as a matter of fact, to head on out with the rest of the contingent to Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. All that coming up on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Sure. Yeah, I get that. You know, the expectation is, you know, hey, Gus, I know, get better, but stronger, man, stronger. I get all that. And I can appreciate that. Believe me, we're doing the same thing in this building. We're trying to find a way to speed this thing up and get to where we're playing more consistently and all those things. So, but yeah, I completely understand that part.
I get it, says Gus. Is that a yes, Tony? The question for Gus Bradley that he was answering last Friday was, is it fair for the fans to expect a winning record next year? He said, yeah, I get that. I get well, is it fair? Should we expect a winning record? I don't think he wants to say point blank. Look, I understand a lot of circumstances come up. What if you lose your quarterback in week one and you end up going 8-8? Well, you didn't have a winning record. That may be a highly successful year if you're able to overcome something like that. So there's certainly some wiggle room on that. But I think I would hope the average fan out there is expecting a winning record and thinks that that should be the expectation and that should be – I don't know if you want to say the minimum for this football team, but again, I don't look at this as a 5-11 team. I look at it as a team that should have been 8-8 is how I look at it. So win the games you should win next year and add a couple more along the way and get to that 9-7, 10-6 mark. I do think that's fair to expect that or to have that as, I don't think it's an unreasonable expectation, put it that way. Doesn't mean they're guaranteed to reach it. Yeah.
No, neither do I. I think it's completely fair. You're talking about year four with these guys being here. I get it that the general manager said he doesn't hold year one and two against the head coach, which is why he's going to be here for a fourth, and ultimately probably why he got the contract for the fifth year last week, that and whatever offseason implications they think they may have for them in free agency or whatever cosmetic it may do for the franchise. But I think it's fair for fans 4 years into this thing to expect it to be it's supposed to be a winning product at this point. And if that's the expectation of the fans, that's a completely fair one.
All right, more from Gus Bradley quickly before we get to Todd Wash. This was from Friday. We couldn't air live. We had some technical issues trying to air the press conference live at the time. We brought you a few of the comments throughout the course of Jaguars today, I'm sure throughout the rest of the afternoon on 1010XL as well. Gus was asked on Friday how the extension will impact his extension, getting a fifth year added onto his deal. How will that impact the locker room?
I don't know how much impact it will have on the locker room. You know, I guess some people say, well, if it's in your last year and now discipline can become an issue. And, you know, I don't know that with our guys. I don't foresee that would be an issue. But I think free agency, what it does show is that the commitment Shad and Dave make and the belief they have in this coaching staff. You know, now there, I don't want to be naive to think that's pretty strong now. What Shad and Dave are doing, saying, hey, we believe it's coming together. We believe strongly in this staff. We believe in the direction we're doing so much. We're going to give a year extension. That's pretty strong now. That's very strong. Will that get to free agency? I'm sure. I'm sure it will. I'm sure they'll appreciate that. I'm sure our players appreciate that. I know you get texts from players saying, that's awesome. That's great. You know, so obviously it has an impact. And that's why I say I try not to go, it's coach, man. That's great. I appreciate that. Our staff appreciates that. Could it limit distractions? Yeah, I think it does limit distractions. Well, don't you still got to be successful? I know, but I think for an assistant coach, when they're preparing, that's not even in their mindset now. They know that, okay, I'm not worried about some things that could happen. I just got to work and, you know, go from there.
Yeah, and that may be the biggest thing, the biggest impact of all, is on the assistant coaches. They're all now running through 2017 as well. So rather than being in the final year of your deal as an assistant coach and maybe halfway through the season, if you're not sure which way it's heading, you're starting to look to greener pastures, Tony. At least this way you know, even if you know the regime gets blown up, you are under employ for another year. You're going to either have a chance to stick with a new coaching staff or at least get paid for another year. You're not getting cast out there with the paychecks getting cut off.
Sure, and it goes back to what we were talking about halfway through the year, too, going into the London game when Shad Khan said that Gus Bradley's going to be kept, and you could feel the fan base fracturing in a lot of ways about whether Gus Bradley should be here or not. We mentioned it going into the London game and throughout the rest of the season. Gus never came close to losing that locker room. The guys in the building like Gus. They believe in Gus. They never got close to – it's not at a point in Jacksonville where the players are in the locker room going, really, we're going to keep this guy? There's none of that happening here, which makes what they've done here in the last month and a half easier to do. Gus Bradley also talked about the out-of-the-box thinking. We talked about this on Friday. Todd Wash sitting in on all the interviews for all the defensive coordinator candidates they brought in. It's not the thing that most teams do. I've never heard of it being done before. Gus Bradley commented on that on Friday.
I think it is out of the box because I've got calls from people going, Gus, you, last year in the offensive coordinator, you had three guys in here at the same time. You know, who does that? And now here's a guy that probably feels strongly about getting a job, and you're having him sit through these guys. And I got two phone calls from coaches that said, that's unbelievable, and tells me something about Todd Wash. I mean, if I heard it once or twice, they said, much respect to Wash. Much respect that he has enough humility to sit in there and do what he thinks best for the organization and take it as a learning opportunity. I mean, who does that? I said, I know. I was probably on me to thrust him in that situation. But if you ask him now, he would say, wow, that's great teaching. What a great learning to sit in there and hear guys talk. And I mean, he's sitting there going, well, I wouldn't do it that way. I would do it this way. Or you know what? Or let me, you know what? That guy's pretty good now, Gus. I could see where this could be a good fit. And I could work with that guy. And I said, that's good. That's good. You know, conversations like that, I think he's pretty strong. you know, it wasn't I do. I would say these two coaches that called me said much respect for Todd Walsh. I would say the same. For what I put him through and had him do, I much respect.
Right. Let's not kid ourselves that Todd Walsh chose this as an ideal situation to be thrust into.
No.
Right? I mean, and now he may in fact say it was a great process to go through. I learned a lot. Hey, look, he's a human being, man. I got to wonder how Todd Walsh would have really felt had he sat through this process, this, quote, humbling process, and then had to play second fiddle to a guy with maybe less experience than he had coming in, who happened to have a good interview, whatever the case may be. I'm glad for Todd that he got it. It was an interesting position to put himself in, or to have his head coach put him in, and I think that's what came through with Gus's comments, these other coaches saying, that's good on Todd. I don't know if it's good on the scenario. I don't know if that's an ideal scenario. I don't want if you're going to see that replicated very often in the National Football League.
No, I can't imagine that it will be, that you're going to have a candidate for your job sit in on interviews with other candidates for a job. That's just such an uncomfortable position for everybody in the room. It's uncomfortable for the guy interviewing the person that is a candidate. It's uncomfortable for the candidate. It's uncomfortable for the guy that's sitting there watching another guy talk about what he would do in the job that you're trying to get. In the end, can you probably take some nuggets from what the other guy said if you're Todd Walsh? Maybe. You know, maybe you're in the room and
right.
You can...
Hey, Marquand Manuel, right. How bad did our D-line play this year?
Right, right. You can pick and choose things where it's like, oh, that sounds like a good idea, I can use that. But that doesn't make it any more comfortable sitting in the room while they come up with a good idea that you're sitting there going, damn.
Right.
It's like, I wish I had thought of that while I was interviewing.
Right.
Like, it never even came to my mind. So that's just it's an awkward situation for everybody involved.
Well, here's Todd Walsh, was asked about it as he got a chance to take the podium for the first time as defensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and commented on Gus putting him in that situation in interviews with other defensive coordinator candidates.
I think my first question is why? You know, why do I need to do that? Yeah. You know, I'll take my time when it's my time. You know, he values my opinion on things, which is obviously nice to have a head coach that values your opinion. And it was like I said, it was interesting. But I did learn a lot. There's some things that we picked up scheme-wise, you know, which is really going to help us, we feel, as a defense. So I enjoyed the process. Stressful process, I would say. Not pressure, stress, as Gus would say. But it's a good process, and I'm glad it's done. I'm excited about it.
Well, yeah, he's glad it's done. Interesting. And why? Why am I doing this?
You want me to do what?
I think Todd Walsh is trying to make the best of a very awkward situation right here. And again, kudos go to him for that. Like we said Friday, Tony, no surprise, no nor hesitancy on either one of our parts to see Todd Walsh elevated to this position. And this does speak very well for him. But damn, man, that's I guess that either can strengthen the bond between the two, or it can create some fractures. And for now, I'm going to believe that it strengthened it because Todd came out on the other side with the job.
Hey, man, they continue to do it their way here in Jacksonville. They are committed to this thing, man.
There's a process, Tony.
And they are
doing it. Unlike any other.
Their way, the way they believed it should be done. Todd Walsh was also asked if, like a lot of people outside the building were thinking from the very beginning of this process, if this defensive coordinator job was his to lose.
No, I didn't. We sat down and talked from the get-go that you're a candidate and that's it. You know, one thing that Gus knows about me is don't beat around the bush, you know. And I said straight from the start, am I a candidate? He said yes. And that is it. Is you're just a candidate. You have to prove to us as an organization that you're the man that we want for the job. And, you know, apparently I did it, and I'm very excited about it.
I like that. As straightforward as can be. You know, just tell me where I stand. Be honest with me. Don't sugarcoat it. There, I got it. Okay, I'm in the mix. He ended up getting the job. Am I the best guy for the job? Well, they said they wanted to hire the best guy, and they hired me. So I'm going to take that to mean they think I'm the best guy for the job. And hopefully he'll turn out to be that. He talked about, Todd Walsh did, what his expectations are for the Jaguar defense in 2016.
You know, I'm not going to get caught up in the stats and all that kind of stuff. I just know we're going to play more disciplined than we have, and we're going to play a sound football. And I think that starts with me holding people accountable, not only our players but our coaches. Like I said, I don't float in the gray. It's very black and white for me, and our coaches know that. And if it's not getting done, I'm probably not going to be too happy about it. But at the same time, we got great coaches, We got some very good players that allow us to make these strides so we can continue to get better.
Yeah, and you like hearing that comment, I don't float in the gray. Hopefully it does get a little more black and white, because that's a great pull quote.
That's the comment of the press conference,
yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, that's a great pull quote, and we'll see what they can get done on the defensive side. Of course, Todd Walsh has been a part of the staff, and there were questions going into this offseason and really halfway through last year if Gus was going to take over play calling duties on the defensive side of the ball. It's been a question through this whole process with whoever's going to come in as the defensive coordinator. Is he going to be more hands-on on that side? And Todd Walsh was asked on the possibility of Gus Bradley calling plays.
If Gus thought that was the best for the organization and for our team, I'm good with that. You know, I left Seattle as a D-line coach and came here as a D-line coach because I came here because I wanted to help Gus. And so to me, it doesn't matter. If he wants to call the plays, he can call the plays. All I care is we go out, we continue to get better, you know, for the organization, Shad, and the community. We just have got to continue to get better.
That's a good attitude to take as well. I would think any guy, though, with any kind of aspirations, I'm sure Todd Walsh does, would at some point eventually want to be calling plays. I would be surprised if he doesn't get the opportunity to call plays, Tony. So I would think, you know, they'll come up with a system that maybe Gus will maybe have, you know, a little bit more direct input or something like that, you know, in crucial situations. I don't know how they'll work it out, but I would think that he trusts Todd Walsh. I think Todd Walsh ultimately will be the play caller on that side of the football for the Jags. One more from him before we take a break here. Todd Walsh asked about how frustrating it was this past year just to see the lack of pass rush that the Jags were able to generate.
You know, it was a little frustrating. Anytime you lose a play like Cedric Marks, I think he only played three games. You know, that's 8.5 sacks I think he had a year ago. And we didn't get the stuff inside to help the outside guys, and at times we didn't have the outside stuff to help the inside guys. So it was frustrating during the year, and we tried to do some things blitz-wise and all that to be able to affect the quarterback, and maybe it wasn't as strong as it needed to be. But for us, we got to be able to evaluate what players we have up front, you know, through free agency, the draft, the ones we have in the building, and what can we do to put them in position to be successful. There's going to be a lot of studying done in the off season on third down. We got to figure out why we were not successful on third down, because if you look at it, the teams that were top 10 in third down also were 7 out of the 10 were top 10s in quarterback disruption. So there's a correlation between disrupting the quarterback and third down. So that's something that we really got to work on here in the offseason. That's our number one project, is we got to figure out third down.
All you had to do is look at yesterday, right? Look at the pass rush, the way it impacted Carson Palmer and Tom Brady.
No doubt.
And, you know, two teams that nobody would have been surprised, I think. Maybe a smidge if Arizona was able to go and beat Carolina, but for the most part, wouldn't have been shocking if either of the road teams had won this weekend. But when you see what they're able to unleash Carolina and Denver with their pass rush, you see that's a pretty good model to follow. Even going back a couple of years, Tony, when Peyton Manning threw a league record 55 touchdowns, it was that Seattle defense that disrupted him right from the outset. And they say defense wins championships. I think it's an oversimplification, but boy, it certainly helps. And we'll see if this defense can catch up with where the offense has been making strides in 2015. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on Jaguars Today. Coming back, this date in football, the Honda Drive around the NFL, and part one of our interview with Johnny Anonymous, author of NFL Confidential. That's coming up straight ahead on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's dig into this date in football history. A lot of Super Bowls played on this date, January 25th. Go back to 1981, Super Bowl 15. The Oakland Raiders beat the Philadelphia Eagles 27-10 in New Orleans. Jim Plunkett, the MVP, Tony, despite the fact Rod Martin had three interceptions in that Super Bowl. What are you grinning at? Eagles lost?
Yeah, it just makes me smile. Philadelphia still hadn't won a Super Bowl.
I can see the smile starting to spread.
Take it, Joe Fortunato, as he standing in here.
Super Bowl 21, 1987, the Giants beat the Denver Broncos 39-20. In Pasadena. Phil Simms, the MVP of that one. Super Bowl 32 in 1998, the Denver Broncos beat the Green Bay Packers behind Terrell Davis's 157 yards on the ground and three rushing touchdowns. And the Bucks won their only Super Bowl on this date in 2003 in San Diego over the Oakland Raiders. John Gruden, at the age of 39, the youngest to ever win the title. Dexter Jackson, the former Seminole, with the Super Bowl MVP Trophy, famous birthdays for this date. Lou the Toe Groza, they nicknamed the award after him, Tony. He is an NFL Hall of Famer, although he played a lot of left tackle in addition to playing kicker. Also played some center and defensive tackle. 9-time Pro Bowler, 4-time first team All-Pro, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1974. Don Maynard, NFL receiver primarily with the Jets, was a 4-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Fame inductee in 1987, born on this date in 1937. Mark Duper, I believe, is settled in Jacksonville now, hasn't he?
I believe so,
yeah. Member of the Marx Brothers receiving duo with Mark Clayton for Dan Marino back in the 80s for the Dolphins and into the 90s, born in this state in 1959. Former Jaguar John Wade, a fifth-round pick of the 1998 NFL Draft, born on this date in 1975. 1985, Patrick Willis, 7 Pro Bowls, 5-time first-team All-Pro selection. He retired last offseason in his early 30s. And also Danny Woodhead, born on the exact same day. That would be January 25th, 1985 for those guys. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, the Super Bowl 50 matchup is set. The Carolina Panthers, after a 15-1 regular season, dominated the Arizona Cardinals yesterday in the NFC Championship game, 49-15, to advance to the Super Bowl. It will be Carolina's second Super Bowl appearance. They lost to New England in Super Bowl 38 by a field goal, 32-29. The Denver Broncos be making their 8th trip to the Super Bowl. They are 2-5 in their previous 7 appearances, with those wins coming back-to-back in Super Bowls 32 and 33 with John Elway. For their current quarterback, Peyton Manning, he will be playing in his 4th Super Bowl, joining Roger Staubach, Jim Kelly, Terry Bradshaw, and Joe Montana on the list with 4 Super Bowl appearances. The previously mentioned John Elway went to 5. Tom Brady, whom the Broncos beat yesterday, has been to 6. Manning is 1-2 in his previous 3 Super Bowl appearances, and when he could become just the 12th quarterback in NFL history to win multiple Lombardi trophies. Carolina has been installed as a 4.5-point favorite. This is the 3rd straight year, on a side note, that both 1 seeds from each conference have advanced to the Super Bowl. That hadn't happened in the previous 19 seasons before that. Carolina Panthers linebacker and team leader Thomas Davis left yesterday's NFC Championship game rout of Arizona with a broken bone in his right forearm. Davis told reporters in the locker room yesterday that he will be playing in the Super Bowl in 2 weeks, saying they have 2 weeks to get his arm figured out, but that he won't miss the opportunity to play in the Super Bowl. And the Philadelphia Eagles and tight end Zach Ertz have agreed to a 5-year contract extension. I haven't seen the numbers on it yet, but I have seen enough to know that it's supposedly going to make him the 4th highest paid tight end in the league,
man,
on an average annual basis.
It's good to be a sometimes producing tight end in the National Football League. Zach Ertz has tons of potential. Maybe he hasn't been utilized properly, but he hasn't exactly overwhelmed you with his productivity in his brief career so far, and he's going to be one of the top 5 highest paid tight ends in the league. Tony, here's an idea probably nobody else is thinking of. Sometime over the next 2 weeks, we should talk about the impact on winning a second Super Bowl on Peyton Manning's legacy. We should do that. I don't think anybody else is going to think of that. So let's spend some time over the next 2 weeks devoted to that. Right now, let's get to this interview we put in the can about a week and a half ago with a guy going by the name of Johnny Anonymous. He's a current NFL player, offensive lineman. Some people think he's David Mulk of the Philadelphia Eagles, and a lot of his story lines up with the details in the book. The book is NFL Confidential, True Stories from the Gutter of the National Football League, as he takes you inside the locker room to give you his perspective. Keep in mind, the audio quality not phenomenal on this because he's using a voice modulator. There's a little bit of feedback, but we think we've doctored it up enough so you can listen reasonably well, and I take you through, again, not endorsing his viewpoint, but I wanted to give him a platform to express what I felt was a unique viewpoint of a player talking unfiltered without worrying about his name being attached to it. He put it out there anonymously, and he'll tell you why as we roll it right now.
All right, welcome back, Jaguars. Today here, Mike Dempsey with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Came across a book, actually, it was recommended to me, a kind of a tell-all, a behind-the-scenes book about what life is really like in the National Football League as told by a present player in the NFL, the caveat being this player is spilling some dirt here, and he doesn't want his name getting out there. And I'll admit, I don't know if I've ever done an anonymous radio interview. I've certainly never done one where I didn't know the identity of my guest, and that is the case today. The book is called NFL Confidential, true confessions from the gutter of football. And for purposes of the book and this interview, the author will go by the name Johnny Anonymous, and you'll even notice that he's using a voice modulator to change his voice because he doesn't want to be found out for who he is. First of all, let's welcome him to the program. Johnny Anonymous, thanks for the time. Glad to have you on here on 1010XL. Tell me, I'll start out with this. Why be anonymous? I think I understand the reason, but in your own words, why be anonymous when you write this book?
It's just the most simple reason of I kind of want to keep my job. And this is kind of one of those things that if the NFL knew who I was, and I don't think I exist in this league anymore. They would just push me out, and there would be no more NFL for me, no more paycheck.
How much of that goes on behind the scenes, the politics of the league, whether it's an issue like this? If you are someone who bucks the trend, if you don't have the cachet of being a superstar, how much you need to keep your mouth shut on certain topics?
Oh, God, if you're a nobody, you don't have any leeway. You have to walk on eggshells in everything you do and everything you say. If you're a guy that's not a big-time starter and you say or do the wrong thing, you might as well just pack your bags and get out.
You are an offensive lineman who's been primarily a backup, although according to the book, you've had some starting experience where you had some injury situations where you have been able to get an opportunity to play. The quote that grabs you, it's right on the cover of the book. It says, "I'm an NFL player, and I freaking hate the NFL," and you don't use the word freaking. We all know what word you use in that. Explain that quote to us. What do you mean by "I hate the NFL"?
Well, it's kind of an odd situation because since I've gotten this far in football, I love the game, and I can't deny that. Even if, as much as I'd like to try, I can't deny that I do love football. I mean, it's something I've done since I was a little boy. It's a big part of who I am. But once you step foot into the NFL, you realize that it's not football anymore. It's not the game that you love. It's not the game that I fell in love with in college. That thing is gone. It's never to come back again. And you realize that you're not playing as a team. You're not playing as a group. You're literally out there fighting for yourself tooth and nail every day just to hang on and maintain a career.
I took from the book in reading it to its conclusion, and I did read this in one night, Johnny, that you hate a lot of the trappings of the NFL, but I felt like you felt you rediscovered your love just for the pure game of football. When you put all the rest of it aside, when you're on the field with your teammates doing your thing, it's you remember the reasons why you fell in love with this game so many years ago.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing about being a backup is you do all the work, you deal with all the crap and the mess and the anxiety and the stress, and you get no reward, you get no play. You don't get to get that feeling out. You don't get to really be yourself. And it really isn't until you get some significant playing time that you kind of settle in and understand, yes, this is what I loved about this game. And I think I found it again, though it's only to be taken away when you just go sit back on the sideline.
Right. Although you did talk about wanting to kind of game the system a little bit, right? You wanted to be, and I'm paraphrasing here, the best backup you could be in the NFL. In other words, don't get the physical pounding and the toll it takes on you, both short and long term, and collect a salary that you probably couldn't replicate anywhere else, you know, for the typical college graduate in the United States. Is that fair to say?
Without a doubt. I think there's a point in time where you realize as you take on the career of being in the NFL, there is the injury worry is massive. You know, we're the only sport in the country or probably job in the country in the world that has a 100% injury rate. I mean, you don't find that many places, and you do anything in your power to take care of yourself so you can, I guess, survive. And really, if you wanted to game the system as well as you could, you'd want to become the most stable and best backup in the country, and you would just hang on and collect some checks and you know, maybe relax on the sideline during a game while your starter's out there getting killed.
And I think, not to put words in your mouth, but correct me if I'm wrong, I think part of the reason you felt okay with that is because you feel the NFL manipulates people. This is a quote from the book. You said, "There's a reason the league I work for is so popular, so powerful. It's an expert at manipulating people, players, fans, coaches, even me." Tell us more about that line of thinking. How does the NFL manipulate people?
Without a doubt. I think in everything they do, just you could look to something as simple as their breast cancer awareness month or or the Army Month or game, whatever they have. And the military, our government pays for that to happen, where it comes off as the NFL is doing such a great service to the military that they're allowing, or they're going through and giving all these players all this military colored gear, this camo stuff, and all the pink stuff for breast cancer, when in all reality, that all comes from someone else paying for it. Just look at media. Just look at this movie Concussion. There's a reason why it was shortened and changed and altered to be more, mellow for the NFL, so that it didn't affect them so much.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that, particularly about breast cancer awareness. I've always wondered, are we not aware at this point? I understand the awareness and the need for testing and stuff like that, but I don't think people realize that that money is not going to breast cancer research to try to cure breast cancer. And that's one of the many ways that I agree with you, that the NFL likes to wrap itself in some worthy causes, but kind of connect themselves with those causes when they're not as directly connected as they'd like you to think they are. The book is NFL Confidential, True Confessions from the Gutter of Football. The author is Johnny Anonymous, a current NFL offensive lineman, a backup primarily throughout his, 5-year career at this point. You hit so many topics in the book, Johnny, that I just want to throw them at you, and you can give me a quick reaction to each of them. I'll start with racism in the NFL. You talk a lot about how it exists, much like it does in society. You just think it's handled better in the National Football League.
Without a doubt. I mean, you've got guys that come from everywhere in the country, raised by different people, different pieces, subsects of society, and you bring them all in the one spot, and you don't just lose that. I mean, you are who you are. You are what you were raised to be. But as far as something that would happen in the NFL or locker room or a cafeteria, something said, where in normal society it would be shunned and the world would run rampant and media would cry about it, for us it's just kind of a, hey, man, that's a little too far, and this, like, light, mellow chuckle throughout the guys. We're not scared of each other, as most people are scared of each other. We respect each other, and we understand that we're all we have on an NFL team or in the NFL or in our life. You know, it's we rely on ourselves.
We're led to believe, though, that racism doesn't exist in sports, right? That it's a meritocracy. If you can play, you can play. Doesn't matter if you're purple, pink, any other color. But you talk, there are still racial divisions, right? The white players, in your experience, tend to associate with the white players, the black players, the Pacific Islanders, whatever the case may be. You go towards, I guess, what you know and what you're more comfortable with. Is that, again, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
No, but people stick with what they're comfortable with. And you'll see white guys to white guys and black guys to black guys. And every once in a while, you'll get that random white guy that was raised in the Bronx, and maybe sometimes he'll stay with the black guy. You know, it's just, we are who we are. We are people. You know, nothing changed in the NFL. And the funny thing about the thought of there never being racism in the NFL, if you just look at an explanation of a white player and a black player, same stats, same everything. The white guy is hardworking and detailed to his game and intelligent, and the black guy is extremely athletic and powerful and explosive, and they're the same player. It's just how it's described.
Well, there's no question about that, Tony. When it comes to draft prospects, we've heard code words being used for ever in the process.
No doubt.
And I think we're starting to get to a point where when you use these, you know, simple things, when you hear a guy is a scrappy gamer, let's make sure we're not trying to say, well, this is a white guy who's overcoming some athletic deficiencies through hard work and intelligence. And that's what it had been for many years.
Jordy Nelson is surprisingly fast.
Right, he's surprisingly athletic.
He's white.
Right, why can't he be athletic, and why can't, you know, any number of African-American players be scrappy gamers as well?
There's a lot of those types of guys in the league where there are scrappy gamers that are playing. Thomas Davis is a hell of an athlete. He's also scrappy and a gamer.
Right.
The dude wants to play with a broken arm in the Super Bowl.
Which he, you know, he may want to. I'm not 100%
apparently he's having surgery today.
About that. We'll see. Quick turnaround. I mean, he's doing what he can to get out there. That's part one with Johnny Anonymous right there, author of NFL Confidential, True Stories from the Gutter of Football. Again, this is his point of view. This is a long interview. Didn't have time to challenge him on every single point. Really wanted him to have the opportunity to speak his piece.
Sure.
If you'd like to give us some feedback on it, you can certainly tweet us at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony. And the Jaguars Today Facebook page is available if you want to go a little bit deeper into your thinking. Part two of the interview coming up next. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're unbelievable.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We are set for Super Bowl 50, Carolina, Denver, squaring off in San Francisco in 13 days. We'll be out there covering it live beginning next Monday and hope you're checking it out all week long. And a bevy of Jags expected to make appearances on Radio Row, including but not limited to Blake Bortles, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Julius Thomas, Telvin Smith. Hopeful to get all those guys on and maybe more, depending on who else shows up out there in San Francisco. Should be fun.
Yeah, we're going to have a blast.
Yeah, it's the first time that there's been this many Jags that I think a lot of people will be interested in talking to. That's where things have turned with the excitement on the offensive side and a young up-and-comer like Telvin Smith. To be sure, the Jags have a little bit more sizzle than they've had in past years. Got to have more steak to go with that next year. Part two of our interview with Johnny Anonymous, author of NFL Confidential, True Stories from the Gutter of Professional Football. Left off, he was discussing racism and another topic that is not always first and foremost in people's minds when they think about the National Football League, but one of the more controversial aspects when you consider the Michael Sam situation over the last couple of years is homophobia and how that plays out in the National Football League as well. We got into that right here.
Let's talk about homophobia, the Michael Sam instance, if you will, that saga. How did players react to that, and how welcome would an openly homosexual player be in the National Football League, and how dependent would that be on his skill level?
I remember when this happened, and this whole thing came out, and you had guys running around the locker room going, what do you do with this guy? Thank God he's not here. Where would you put him? You get him his own locker room? You get him his own shower? You put him in a closet? You keep him away from everyone else? And it's just, it is what it is. I mean, it's a league whose handshake and high five is a slap on the ass. And the thought of the slap on the ass coming from a guy that's homosexual, it just doesn't taste well. It doesn't sit well. And it scares a lot of guys. And I don't think an openly homosexual man in the NFL is going to exist for quite some time until there's some absolutely untouchable player. You know, the great of the great that comes out, it's the only way it would stick. And I think he would still have some alternate issues from it.
And I'm sure you would agree there are homosexual players in professional football now. But I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. The way I'm reading it is the reality is the players have more of an issue just with a guy being open about it. You may know, but you have plausible deniability if the guy's in the closet. Is that fair to say?
Without a doubt. I mean, there's always that guy in the locker room. In every locker room you go into, there's one, maybe two, and you're like, all right. You know, he says some weird stuff, but he's got a wife or he's got a girlfriend, so it must be okay. But that same guy, if you heard 10 years from now that he came out, you'd go, well, you know, I'm not playing.
Understood.
As long as it's not for sure, it's not, it's okay.
And by the way, we're not trying to judge here today. We're trying to get an accurate picture, and that's why you go anonymously, because certainly a lot of what's in the book is not politically correct. You have a disdain for political correctness that comes through. And so we're just trying to give you a forum to express the reality from your point of view of what happens in the National Football League. Let's talk about the Ray Rice situation and the entire domestic violence aspect that the National Football League has tried to crack down on since that really came to a head with Ray Rice. I got the sense from reading it that was one universal thing that most players you saw react to were in complete agreement that Ray Rice went way over the line, and a lot of guys were more than uncomfortable with that.
Without a doubt. He lost respect from every single player in the league the moment he did that. When that video came out of him basically knocking out his wife in an elevator, it was over. No one wanted to deal with him. No one would want to talk to him. I'm sure he lost a lot of friends that day. But the sad part is that it's a league of angry men. And really, the more troubled you are and the angrier you are within yourself, you're going to be a good football player. The problem is when you get into society and you run into a situation where you really have to hold yourself back, that's where some players struggle. And as much as it is awful that he did that, it's not surprising.
And based on your comments in the book, a lot of people weren't, not that they were not surprised that Ray Rice was involved in this kind of situation, but that he had an image that didn't necessarily match up with the reality as players thought, that he wasn't this great team first guy, at least the way I got the impression from your book.
Yeah, from the word of the grapevine, he was a disease in the locker room. It seemed like a lot of guys just didn't like who he was as a person.
And it does seem like certain guys get propped up, and you find out the real story years later. You talk to guys. I've covered the NFL for 20 years now, and it is funny how the public perception doesn't always match reality. Johnny Anonymous, author of NFL Confidential, here with us for a couple more minutes, and we do appreciate the time today. Certainly, so many things we can get into here. We touched on it earlier, the concussion brain trauma aspect of it, the long-term health implications. Are players becoming more and more evolved on this topic? And how much concern is there, or how much conversation is there, or is there still a out of sight, out of mind, it's not going to happen to me attitude?
There's both. And the two conversations can come within 5 seconds of each other. And we all understand what's happening. We all understand that this is truly affecting who we're going to be physically and mentally for the rest of our lives. But you can't think about that when you go play. You can't even have that a shred of thought in your mind, because if you're going to be a successful football player, you need to put everything in it. And you need to, you'll take your prescriptions, you'll take your Toradol or whatever it is, and you'll go out there numb, and you'll hit and run and do everything as hard as you can. And it's a sad thought. We all know it's going to happen. It's a matter of time, and it's a scary thing for all of us.
A lot of guys will self-medicate as well, as we well know. I mean, it's a brutal game. Your body feels miserable, described as being in a series of car wrecks every Sunday afternoon. And you write in the book, as something that I think that's well known from NFL observers, is that it's very easy to not get caught using marijuana. You get tested one time in the off season. Once you pass that, unless you give them a reason to, they're not going to test you for street drugs again. How prevalent is the use of marijuana and other illicit street drugs in the National Football League?
I mean, speaking of marijuana especially, it's like a celebration once guys get tested. Once they get hit with that annual street drug test, they'll literally run from the piss guy, run back in the locker room and celebrate because they get to go blow it out tonight. I mean, it's actually funny is what it is.
And in terms of marijuana, I would imagine is the most prevalent of these kind of, drugs of abuse, or however you want to categorize them.
Sure, without a doubt. I mean, it's almost like it's all right, I feel like death. And a lot of guys use it just to calm down at night, to ease the stress and anxiety of what it takes to be in the NFL, which is a place where they artificially produce stress just so you can learn to handle it better.
Johnny Anonymous, again, the author of NFL Confidential, True Confessions from the Gutter of Football. I read the book, and I, like everyone who's going to read the book, Johnny, I try to figure out who could this guy be, right? And I understand you said you left a messed up trail of breadcrumbs as you changed names of teams and scores of games and things like that. Because trust me, when you said you lost to Cincinnati in the preseason 27-10, I went and checked, and nobody lost to them 27-10 that week. So I get the point that you're trying to cover your identity. How concerned are you, though, that as enough people who are in the know read this book, that they'll be able to put the pieces together and figure out who you are?
You know, I've seen bits and pieces, and I had my dad say this one thing, and there's choices out there, but I'll tell you what, I am confident in myself and how we wrote this and how we disguised this, that no matter how obvious it seems or who it seems, you're probably wrong.
You're still on a roster, right?
Yeah.
So you played in 2015, because the book takes you through the 2014 season. Right now, the way you feel, and again, I'm not trying to pin you down as to who you are. I'm just curious, how long do you see yourself playing in the NFL?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, at the end of every season, you look at yourself, and I've done this since I got in the league. You go, all right, that's it. And there's a lot of us that do that. And the season will close, and you'll kind of wipe your hands of it and you go, well, maybe I'm done. Maybe this is it. You want to be done and you feel like you should be done. And, you know, the time comes around, April falls, and you miss it, and you want it back. And I don't know what's going to happen this year or next year or the year after, and it's a struggle every year to figure it out if I should or will or don't want to, or it's just a hard thing. You just get sucked in, and it's hard to walk away.
Well, the book has been out since the 1st of January. What from the reaction you've heard already, what has been the reaction from either people in the league or just other people that has been filtered back to you?
You know, I don't know exactly from the league. I think they're kind of just hoping it goes away. But I've read reviews, and I look at a couple things, and, you know, people love it. I'm glad to see that people enjoy it. It's an avenue for the normal fan and just person, even someone that's not a fan, to take a ride in my shoes and look from my eyes and feel my pain and feel my stress and feel the highs and the lows. And I think it's just a good story and something that a lot of people enjoy.
I'm curious.
Being a quick read.
Yeah, it was a quick read. One night for me, like I said, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I'm curious. You mentioned fans viewing players not as human beings but as commodities and entertainment. As an offensive lineman, you probably don't get this. I love fantasy football, but I also understand the underbelly of that is a lot of people on social media are blasting players. You didn't score enough touchdowns for me. You didn't do this. What is the typical player's reaction to fantasy football?
I don't know if it's necessarily fantasy football. I mean, there's some guys that play it themselves, and they have themselves on their team, and they get mad at themselves for not scoring enough, which is comical in itself. But as far as fans attacking players, I mean, there's some guys that really get upset. I mean, really upset. And it's bad to see because fans don't have a concept of what we are or who we are, and they just think we don't care, and they'll just hammer guys. And there's some guys that just get destroyed by fans, and they hate it.
All right, I'll end with this, and again, we appreciate how long you went with us today. As a guy that I think it's fair to say has a love-hate relationship with the National Football League and somewhat with the game of football, but has an insider's perspective, if you were put in charge of the league and by the Players Association and the commissioner's office, and they said, what's the number one thing you would do to improve the game, the experience, not only for the fans but for the players themselves, what would the first change you'd like to make to the NFL be?
I'd reassess healthcare and I'd make guaranteed contracts, without a doubt.
When you talk about healthcare, you're saying you'd increase healthcare for what aspect of healthcare would you change?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a vested player, you get healthcare for 5 years after you play, and then you're left as a shadow of a man, a broken man that's going to pay insane premiums the rest of your life. I think there should be a longer term plan for the NFL to pass the players to get them health care. I mean, not to mention that most guys, 80% within 2 years, are bankrupt. You know, what do those guys do? And really the only option that they say or they give us is, hey, go get Cobra. You know, Cobra would cost me probably almost $3,000 a month.
Wow.
No one can survive on Cobra. So that's a big issue.
Well, listen, I don't think everyone will love the book. I think certainly some people will probably hate you for trying to, what they'll see as tarnish the game that they love. Others are going to love you for taking them deeper inside the game they love and showing them the reality of the situation. But love it or hate it, I think you'll find the book fascinating. And, you know, like I said, pour through it in one night. It's an easy read. It's an entertaining read. You can all play the game. Guess who Johnny Anonymous is? And I'm guessing you will not be in San Francisco on Radio Row. That would be a little too conspicuous, I have a feeling. So, well, good luck with the press tour, man. You know, good luck with the book. Good luck with your career. I did find it fascinating. I think it was, I don't know, do you ever read Ball 4, the baseball tell-all from the late 60s?
I did not.
Pick it up. I think you'll see some similarities there. That was the first book that really took you inside locker room culture, and I found this to be similar in some ways. Again, highly entertaining, fascinating read. I do love the league. I understand it's got a lot of imperfections, and there is a human toll to it. And you're part of the face of that now. We appreciate the time. Once again, tell folks where they can pick up the book.
Frankly, I think it's everywhere. Any bookstore, any big bookstore, Amazon, it's rolling out like crazy from there. So NFL Confidential, go get it, go buy it, go enjoy it.
NFL Confidential, true confessions from the gutter of football. I'm an NFL player, and I blanking hate the NFL. You'll see that staring at you right on the cover. Johnny, or whatever your name is, again, we appreciate the time, man. Best of luck with the endeavor, and look forward to, if you ever write a sequel, I'll be reading that one, I guarantee you.
Perfect. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there you go, Johnny Anonymous, as he goes by, the author of NFL Confidential. One thing, Tony, I mean, the stuff on homophobia is classic. Depends on which side of the fence you're on and your perspective of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's very don't ask, don't tell reminiscent, right? Like, oh, yeah, we don't mind homosexual guys as long as you don't tell us you're actually gay, right? 'Cause, and he even said, you know, and I unironically, something like you know, maybe we'd have to have them change in a closet or something. Like,
yeah,
you know, the whole,
like, do they get their own locker room?
The whole concept of coming out of the closet, you know, this this idea that because you're a homosexual means you're going to be a sexual predator or something of the like, I think, you know, I disagree with. But
well, disagreeing with it is fine. It's that you're talking to a player that's in an NFL locker room and says, this is how we feel about
Understood.
It. And that's like, that's the interesting part of the discussion, is there is no PC in the discussion. It's, this is the way we talk about it. This is the way we feel about it. And whatever people are saying to the media, there may be people in the locker room who don't feel that way, but there's enough that do that this is the prevailing thought.
No, at least from his point of view, right. The prevailing thought. And every locker room can be different and all that, and we get that, but it doesn't make it right either. You know, and so
certainly not.
You can feel any way you like about anything he had to say on that. And again, the point wasn't to pin him down and push him on some of those. It was more to give him a forum to express it from the place where he was writing from, which was an anonymous NFL player. Although, as I said, a lot of people, if it's not David Mulk of the Eagles, he needs to come out and say it's not me, because the internet really has done a pretty good sleuthing job to line up a lot of the major details, because you can change some of the stories in the book. I doubt you change the fact that your mom died at an early age and that drove you, you know, that anger from that drove you to be a successful football player. It seems like a detail that wouldn't be made up, and Mulk's mom did pass away of cancer when he was like 11 years old, and that's when he began playing football. So there are a lot of reasons to believe it could be him. If it's not, again, if I were him, I'd get the word out, because if you are going to get blackballed, you want to at least make sure it's for something that you did. So like it or not, we thought we would bring that to you and give you a little look. Again, the book is called NFL Confidential, True Stories from the Gutter of Professional Football. Coming back with a look at the fan feedback spotlight, just asking you for your early lean. Where are you going with Super Bowl 50? Who do you think is going to win? How's it going to play out? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, if you had to pick the Super Bowl right now, Tony, who you got? What's the score?
Carolina, I'll go 21-13.
Say 27-20, something like that, though. Same kind of thing, by about a touchdown, right? Look, it shouldn't be considered some shocking upset if the Denver Broncos win the Super Bowl.
No.
The way that defense played, and, of course, cue all the conspiracy theorists if Peyton Manning is able to get one on the way out, although he insists he wants to play again next year. Wouldn't that be this like the worst ending possible? Win the Super Bowl, come back, and then just be, you know, absolutely
what he was
horrible.
For the first
right.
half of this year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because the way it lined up this year, the idea that you could go into a season planning, hey, I'm going to shelve this guy until about December and then see if we can roll him out here. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to know how good Denver's defense really was, honestly, and how mediocre the NFL in general really was this season, the Denver Broncos, with Peyton Manning throwing almost as many interceptions as Blake Bortles did in the entire season, Blake finally passed him in Week 17 after Manning played basically half a year. That guy playing quarterback and then Brock Osweiler playing quarterback was good enough to win the one seed in the AFC playoffs and have home field throughout the playoffs. That's how good the Denver defense was throughout the 2015 NFL season, and it's gotten them into a Super Bowl, and Peyton Manning is there now for the fourth time trying to get his second ring.
Yeah, and that's going to be something obviously we talk a lot about over the next couple of weeks. And Cam Newton, is he Cam Newton now the face of the National Football League? As NFL.com has already proclaimed him today, he's the best player in the league, Tony. Well, did he just become the best player in the league this weekend? Was it based on the season? Were you already leaning that way? It is interesting, right? The most recent thing we've seen.
Always.
Right? Now, Tom Brady, all of a sudden, Tom Brady, well, he didn't complete 50% of his passes. You know, he was shaking in the face of the rush. Maybe Tom Brady, you know, got to reevaluate, take a step back. Carson Palmer, forget everything he did all season long. He had two subpar playoff games, so he stinks too. We do tend to overreact at this time. By the way, the Cardinals said number one priority this offseason, increase the pass rush. Everyone's looking for pass rush, people. Everyone, even Denver, is going to look to keep their pass rush intact, and you can never have too much pass rush.
Yeah, pass rush and offensive line. Those two offensive lines that played in the AFC Championship game were the last two standing, and they both stink.
Yes.
I mean, just stink out loud.
Yes.
They're terrible, and they were the last two teams standing in the conference. Offensive line play across the league is bad, but especially compared to what it was 10, 15
years ago. They have quarterbacks so they can diagnose the play before the snap,
yep,
right, and can help as much as any other quarterbacks in terms of supporting a deficient offensive line. Clearly, yep, it wasn't enough yesterday in the face of overwhelmingly competent pass rush and great individual players and a great scheme. Denver overwhelmed what New England tried to do yesterday. So build it up on that side of the football, Dave Caldwell. That's not like we're breaking any news that they need to do that there. We asked people today, what is their early lean for Super Bowl 50? What kind of feedback did we get?
Here's what we got from Daniel. Panthers over the Broncos. Final score 24-12. Carolina's team is more complete. From Eric, right now I think it's a close game, somewhere along the lines of Denver 28, Carolina 24. So one in each column there. From John, Broncos win and Manning announces his retirement from the NFL holding the Vince Lombardi trophy. I think that would be kind of a cool moment. And then we get the kind of less predictive responses here. From Stoff Prime, as long as the five-headed noodle-arm duck-throwing quarterback doesn't win, I don't care. From Tommy, he says, lots and lots of alcohol, his prediction for the Super Bowl. And from Mike, Jaguar 62, forehead 7. I'm not sure where that one came from.
No. Although we did have somebody say that maybe Carolina would win 62-7 and send another past his prime quarterback into retirement, something along those lines. Those were not the exact words, but that was the kind of the gist of the message right there. Got a few on Facebook. Carolina 35-24 says Joshua. David Levine said these are going to be the highest scoring or lowest scoring in Super Bowl history. He says he sees Panthers right now like 6-3. I don't think it's going to be that low score. I think Carolina's going to score some points. Both of these defenses are capable of scoring 7-14 points themselves if the other quarterback gets sloppy with the football. Damon said with the way Carolina's playing, which is lights out, straight out balling, Carolina will win it by 14, 28-14. Dustin said Gus and his staff will be watching from a sports bar. That's his prediction. That's great. Adrian Jackson, whoever wins, we all lose. Chad said Panthers 24-13. Patty went with 34-21 Panthers. And Denver 27-23 for Steve Muncie. So who knows? You know, that's why we play the games out. We just don't simulate them 10,000 times and determine the winner.
No.
Remember the whole New England run? They were, what, like 17-point underdogs against the greatest show on turf, the St. Louis Rams, looking for back-to-back Super Bowl championships. Was it? I think it was back-to-back at the time, right?
It was, yeah.
Won it the year before, and they stunned the world, or stunned the sports world anyway, with that first victory, and have since been the dominant franchise in the National Football League. Not this season, however. Good, but not going to be good enough to get them a fifth ring in the Brady Belichick era. That'll do it for us today. XL Primetime is coming up. We'll have plenty of time to talk about the Super Bowl matchup going forward. Tomorrow, Jeff Lagerman in for probably the final time as we leave for San Francisco next week. Jeff won't be on with us next week, so it might be the last full show for a while, at least, this all season. So tune in for that. We'll also have Dan Hicken and John Osier checking in periodically throughout the next few days from the Senior Bowl. Find out what's going on with the Jaguars coaching staff and some of the prospects that they're working with in Mobile, Alabama as well. Thanks to Wild West Guns and Gold, Monday's sponsor of Jaguars Today, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers to sporting arms, and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA guaranteed. Guns for Jacks. That's guns, the number 4, JAX.com, online, and visit them at South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693 693- 0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. Thanks to Johnny Anonymous, author of NFL Confidential. Today, stick around because XL Primetime is straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Pelusa por aquí, pelusa por allá, pelusa por delante, pelusa por detrás.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field.